Well, hey, everybody, and welcome back again to X-Files Diaries. I'm Annie.
I'm Jen.
And today we have another list. One of our very favorite things to do is rank things. And we are going to count down our top 10 favorite guest appearances.
Yeah.
On the X-Files. The X-Files has run the gamut, right? Like, I can't tell you how many times I'm watching an episode with, like, a random episode, and my husband will walk in and be like, oh, that guy. Oh, I know her. Like, it's right? So many of them. So many of them. And lots of them, it would have been like one of their earliest first appearances, and they went on to become huge stars or bigger stars. So it's really quite crazy. I found this incredibly difficult. Did you?
I found it so much more difficult than I thought I would. When we first talked about the idea of, hey, let's do top 10 guest stars, a couple immediately popped into my head, and I thought, oh, this is going to be great. Now I just got to think of, like, you know, 7 or 8 more. And then, no, next thing I knew, I had 20. And it was really hard for me to narrow it down because there have been a lot of great guest stars on The X-Files, which is a credit to the people doing the casting and a credit to the writing as well, that they've written such great parts for one-time characters. And there were so many to pick from, and it was – I had to kind of, like, really think hard about how to narrow down the criteria. And at the end of the day, I kind of based it on what would the effect on the episode been if they'd cast somebody else in this role. If this person hadn't been in the role and they'd cast someone else – to what degree would that have affected my take on the episode? So that's where I kind of came. But it was still really tough to narrow it down to 10 because there are a lot of very good options to pick from.
I have to throw out a disclaimer for I know everybody who is biting their fingernails in terror. I am not picking Diana Fowley, just so you guys all know. Mimi Rogers is not on my list. Well, Jen, she wasn't anyway, but we did agree that we weren't going to do any sort of recurring character.
Yes.
So no, Maggie Scully's or Skinner's or any Krycek, anyone like Krycek, that.
Anyone that was in, like, I think we decided, I think our criteria was it preferably should be one episode, but it could be like one episode and maybe one sequel episode, but that's it, essentially. So, but it's more like sort of one and done type people. Because otherwise it's very hard to kind of figure out what counts as a guest role, what doesn't, because there are lots of people that show up more than once, and it's hard to define who's a recurring character, who's a guest star. So we're trying to keep these as narrowly defined as possible.
Right. And it, honestly, there are at least... I had probably like 25 on my list, and like 5 of these, it like kind of breaks my heart to not be able to put on my list. So it really, it really was tough, and I'm really excited to hear.
It was hard. Yeah, this was one of the hardest top 10 lists for me in a while in terms of trying to narrow it down. It was just like, usually I have like, you know, a couple on the bubble, and I'm like, okay, I've got it narrowed down. I've got 9. I can add one more. It's going to be one of these 3, except it was like one of these 8. And it's like, oh, I can't pick amongst these. So it was tough.
Yeah.
Well, but that's good. That's good. I'm happy with the 10 I have.
Depending on how quickly we can get through these, I wouldn't mind throwing out like a few honorable mentions at the end, just briefly, like a few that like got so close that they almost made the list, but we don't really have time to talk about them. But we'll see, because we don't know what we have on each other's list. So it's possible we might be able to talk about them.
We don't know how this is all going to shake out. Yeah. It's all the suspense is in the air because we don't know what's on each other's list. We don't know what order anything's in. And this is going to be interesting.
It makes it so much more fun. All right, Jen,
I'm excited.
I want you to start. So let's hear your number 10.
Okay, my number 10 is happens to be one of these characters and actors that fits into the criteria of one episode plus a sequel. And that character is Eugene Victor Toombs in Squeeze and Toombs, and the actor, of course, Doug Hutchison. And first, I just have to say about Doug Hutchison, because I looked him up on Wikipedia today
to learn
a little more about him. Okay, first of all, no, we're not going to get into the fact that he married a 16-year-old girl. Is that what you're thinking, Annie?
Yes, okay.
Well, we're not gonna, I just did, I guess.
I can't not think about that when I think about this guy. So I'm going to Chandler it from Friends and just snap and remove it from my brain.
No,
continue.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, apparently the law allowed it. Anyway, and they were married for quite a few years. They eventually divorced.
We weren't going to talk about it, Jen. We weren't going to talk about it.
Oh, I'm sorry. anyway, Yeah, but no, I was going to quote something else from that article that was perfectly nondescript and wholesome, that says, Doug Hutchison, this is how this Wikipedia article starts. Doug Hutchison is an American character actor known for playing disturbing and antagonistic characters.
Oh, God, like, yeah.
He's very, but that's, this is it. This is it about his role in Squeeze and Tombs. He is very disturbing.
He's like, really good at this, in this role.
He's very, very good at being disturbing. He doesn't even say that much. He has very few lines. He has almost no lines in Squeeze and very few in Tombs. And the everything is about his physicality, just his whole being, just like the way he licks his fingers and turns his head. And he's got this sort of like predatory, very predatory body language.
Just the way he moves. Yeah, it's really, it's, I don't even want to say it's subtle because it's not the right word, but it's just, it's really,
just there.
Yeah, he's just, he's good at it. Yeah.
It's very creepy. Natural.
Yeah. Creepy it AF, Jen. Natural.
Creepy is it? Creepy AF and really, really scary. Like for me, like Tombs is one of the most scary villains on the X-Files. He's like the idea that he's going to come into my house and eat my liver always seems omnipresent. And he's like, even when he's got like a very sort of blank expression on his face, he still looks super terrifying. Mm-hmm. So he's very sort of like, you know, he has a sort of stillness about him, but it's somehow terrifying at the same time. So he's kind of a one of a kind. There's no one, I've never seen anyone like him. So that's why Doug Hutchison is my number 10.
You know, I know him from The Green Mile. Did you ever see that movie?
Right.
And it's a different character, but it's still a villain. And he also plays that character really well. He is really good at these creepy, disturbing characters. I mean, I can't fault him for that. Taking all of the personal issues aside, he's great in this role. He's memorable in this role. That scene I remember in Squeeze most of all is the lie detector test. What is that?
Oh, yeah.
What is that called? Is there...
It's a lie detector test,
okay.
Isn't it?
I feel like there was like a more technical term
for it. Polygraph?
Thank you. Okay, I was blanking. If polygraph. But lie detector works. That scene, he's so creepy in that scene. And like, and apparently that also, I feel like we talked about this before, was the scene that got him hired because they were just like, what is wrong with this guy? He's creepy. And they were like, that's perfect. He's hired. Like
exactly. Like all he's doing is saying yes and no.
Yeah.
And
it's so good.
Does it?
Yeah,
is terrifying.
Yeah,
and
great.
It's not
pick.
Obvious. There's nothing you can really put your finger on to say that's why it's scary. It just is.
Yeah,
he's just very, very, very creepy.
Do you want to hear something funny? I mean, that's a great choice. Not on my list. That I literally just noticed. I don't have any villains on my list.
Really?
None.
I cannot say the same.
Okay.
Maybe a couple on mine.
Actually, that's technically not correct. But, like, I definitely don't have any, like, monster-type murderer, killer people like that on my list. Okay. But I did figure he might be on yours. So I didn't pick him. But that's a great, great choice. Great choice.
He's great. Because again, he is those episodes. Those episodes without Doug Hutchison, I don't think there even would have been a Tombs. They would have just said Squeeze is enough. But the fact that... I think there's a good chance they wrote Tombs because Doug Hutchison was so good. So he is that role. He makes those episodes, and they're great, great episodes from season one. So glad you liked my number 10. What's your number 10, Annie?
Yeah, there are not very many, real quick, there are not very many that they bring back that way.
Yeah,
and you know that the reason they did that was because, it was worthwhile to bring him back. So
yeah, and it worked. It worked. That second Tombs is a great episode, too.
Okay. It is, and you're probably not going to like my number 10 very much.
Oh, great. This is off to a fantastic.
No, you will. You will. Okay.
All right. Okay. Lay it on me.
My number 10, and I probably would have left this off my list just because I feel like we've talked about it plenty of times, but like I can't not put this character
That's
on my
fair.
List.
That's fair. Yeah.
Bad Blood, Sheriff, I wrote Fartwell, Luke Wilson. I think, as much as I love Bad Blood and you dislike Bad Blood, I think one of my favorite things about this episode is Luke Wilson's performance. I feel like if you plop him out of that episode, it would not be nearly as high on my list. As much as I love it, and I still love it. But like, he is so perfectly cast in this role that every time I watch it, like, first of all, I know we've talked about this before, he looks exactly like David Duchovny. He looks the same. They have the same build, the same look, everything about it. And which, to me, that's like... the shippiest thing they could have done mid-season five is they cast this guy that Scully is clearly attracted to, who looks exactly like Mulder. And I can't wrap my brain around, like, that decision to do that was obviously intentional. I love it. I think that it's just he's playing two roles, because he's playing Mulder's version and then he's playing Scully's version, which are two very diametrically opposed roles. And he does them both so brilliantly. He's super dreamy in Scully's version. Like, he's totally the kind of guy that you're like, all right, I can go hang out with this guy. And then in Mulder's version, I can't even talk about it because it just makes me laugh so much. He's so funny. And I those scenes of the two of them in the graveyard, I could tell that they're just riffing. Like, I swear to God, they're just like riffing off of each other. It's so funny. I have to say it, the Whitlands, every single time I cackle. It's so freaking funny. I don't hear no birds singing. Like,
do a really good Sheriff Fartwell, I have to say.
And he is, to me, always going to be Sheriff Fartwell. Like, well, I don't write Hartwell. I just write Fartwell because I just, it's funny. And I could tell that, like, Duchovny had so much fun saying Sheriff Fartwell because he could. He could get away with it. And so that's my number 10, Luke Wilson.
It's a great pick. I mean, it's not my favorite episode, obviously. And, well, obvious to me anyway. But I think a lot of listeners will agree with you. So I'm glad that you picked that, because I did think about him in sort of coming up with my list, thinking about, you know, what were memorable guest appearances. And his was definitely memorable. A lot of people, and you're right, he's playing two characters, which, like, high degree of difficulty. And yeah, he is dreamy. So, you know, I'm going to agree that he's dreamy and agree that he's very good in the role, and say, good for you. So I'll leave it at that.
I'll
so
take it.
I agree in theory that that's a good pick.
I'll take it because I know most people agree with me.
Yeah. You could, right now, everyone listening to this is saying, yes, Annie, yes. Shut up, Jen. I'm going to sort of speak on behalf of the listeners right now and say, excellent choice, Annie.
Thank you, Jen.
You're welcome.
All right. Let's hear your
number 9.
Let's do it.
All right. This is going to be a weird choice, I think. I'm not sure how this will go over. My choice in number 9 is from the episode Small Potatoes, and it's Darren Morgan as Eddie Van Blunt. Partly, and it's, you know, controversial episode, obviously. We're not going to open up that can of worms right now. But so that aside.
Just performance.
I mean, just performance. I love the fact that this is Darren Morgan. And by this time, we all know exactly who Darren Morgan is. This is after he's done all of his writing. He's done his writing. He's finished his writing on The X-Files at this point. So we know who he is. And they, for reasons that are not entirely clear, decided to cast him in this role. And it's not a flattering role at all. Mm-mm. So it's not like they took their buddy and put him in a role that was going to make him seem like a superhero or something. It's like not flattering at all. And the fact that he's not an actor, to me, gives a slight vibe that he could be playing himself. I mean, I don't think he actually is in this case, but when you see someone that you know is not an actor playing a role, you do kind of assume most of the time, at least I do, that they're kind of playing themselves to a certain extent. And so the fact that you kind of think he might be playing himself and he's playing this really pathetic loser is, and it's so unflattering. I think it's awesome that he did it and that he ran with it and he embraced it with all of his heart. And he's actually quite good. I mean, he's not an actor, generally speaking. He did play the Fluke Man as well. We'll point that out. I'm not going to really count that as one of his great performances, but you know, given that it's Darren Morgan, given the oddness of casting him in this particular role, and given the fact that he's actually quite good and quite funny in it, given all those sort of extraneous factors, I had to give it to him as my number 9, Darren Morgan and Eddie Van Blunt with an H in Small Potatoes.
That's a really cool pick. That wasn't on my list. I was considering doing it, but then I kind of had the whole, like, oh God, then we have to talk about Small Potatoes and we have to open that can of worms, and I didn't want to go there, but we don't have to go there. He did a great job. You're right. And I do think from the interviews that I've heard in Darren Morgan give, he does feel to me a lot like that character. Yeah. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I just feel like he kind of maybe honed some of his own sort of vibes to play Eddie Van Blunt. And I mean, I think, and not to like steer it away from Darren Morgan, but I feel like David Duchovny actually did a good job, like in some of those scenes, playing him, playing Eddie Van Blunt. Like,
he did a really good job with it.
Yeah, and which obviously goes to their relationship, their friendship, which I think is kind of a fun little thing to think about. Yeah,
but it's kind of cute, and it does also point out that Darren gave a recognizable performance, that his performance was noteworthy enough that we can tell when Mulder's playing him, that there's definitely some definitive sort of identifying characteristics that we can see.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a cool pick. And I like it. And giving the writer a shout out, the writer turned actor a shout out is a great one.
Just kind of like, good for him, you know, good for him. He was really brave just to take that on. Yeah. And he did a great job of it. And I just love Darren Morgan. So I just like to put him on every list, even if he doesn't technically belong there. He's there anyway. So he's my number 9. What's your number 9, Annie?
My number 9, and I don't think this is a cheat, because I feel like while this character comes technically is in 4 episodes, I can't consider this a recurring character.
Okay.
Albert Holstein, played by Floyd Redcrow Westerman.
Nice choice.
I love Albert Holstein, and I really wish we'd gotten more of him. And I mean, I say that now, even though I feel like the scenes that we got with him were just, they were all so great that I can't really complain. But I what I really love about him is that he wasn't an informant in any way, but he was like helpful in kind of a cryptic way. I love that they cast, I love the diversity of the casting. He played this role so great. He was in the Anasazi arc and the Biogenesis arc. So that was quite a stretch of time. That was 4 years of time that they decided to bring this character back. Yeah. And I think he kind of held the mythology together. And we'll get into this, Jen, when we start continuing in our mythology series. More than we think, like, I feel like a lot of the things that he says, like when you have a cold open with Albert Holstein telling like a parable or I pay attention. Like, I love those, and I love his voice. It's so calming and soothing. And when he talks about like the white buffalo, and then like we hear about the white buffalo later and like again and again, and we think whenever he's on screen, something important is happening. Like, he's going to give us some important information, or he's going to be doing something super helpful. And I just thought he was such a great, interesting, unique character played by a really good actor who just really inhabited that part. And we also got that scene with Skinner where he says, "Pucker up and kiss my ass," and he got to be present for that. So I can't complain about that. He was in that scene, right? He was in the scene.
Yeah. Okay. I do believe he was sort of, he just kind of showed,
hovering in the background.
Yeah. He appears, and Skinner essentially introduces him with, "That's when you pucker up and kiss my ass," which is all great.
Love it. Yeah. So that's my number 9.
Great choice. For some reason, I didn't think of him, so I'm really glad that you did. Because I love Albert Holstein too. And he's a great actor. And he just brings a lot of depth to that role. And he's just one of those actors that when he's on screen, you pay attention. Mm-hmm. He doesn't overdo anything. He's very sort of calm, but he's very sort of like, I'm just drawn to him.
Yeah.
And he has an awesome voice. And you know how I feel about, you know, Chris Carter speeches,
monologues
that start episodes especially. But that's one of the very few ones that works. And it's because of the way that it's read and because of the way that it's delivered. So if you can do that, then you definitely deserve to be on the list. So that's a great choice. I'm really glad that you picked that one. So I'm glad you remembered that. So kudos to you.
What's your number 8?
Number 8, which for some reason I wrote down as number 9, but no, it's definitely number 8. I have 9 twice. Okay, my number 8, and it really is number 8. Let's head off to the revival now, to The Lost Art of Forehead Sweat.
Oh.
And Brian Husky as Reginald Murgatroyd.
I need to say he was one of my heartbreakers. Came very, very close. So I'm glad that we get to talk about him.
Good. Yay, we get to talk about him anyway. So I love Reggie, and Brian Husky does such a great job in that role. He's just over the top enough. He has to be a little over the top in that role. Mm-hmm. And he does it to just the right degree somehow. He's very, very funny. He's just a naturally funny guy. I think he's also a comedian. I particularly love the scene with him, Mulder, and Scully in the parking garage. The three of them are just very funny together and work really well together. I love the moment when he and Scully both yell out, "It's not parallel universes." I mean, that's all just like gold to me. I love that. I think that that role, the character could have been really annoying, but I just find him really sort of like funny and endearing and a little sad. Like, I feel kind of feel for him because there's that sort of moment as well when, you know, there's that a bit of a running joke throughout Lost Art of Forehead Sweat that the characters keep saying, "Wait, what?" like over and over again. But there's that moment when Scully has discovered the truth about Reggie, that he's been in a quote-unquote mental institution. And Reggie says, "Wait, what?" And the way he says it that time is kind of heartbreaking because he's so, like, shocked and sort of crestfallen.
He was so sure that he had figured it out.
He was so sure, and he's just so sad at that moment. And he really pulls that off, too. So, you know, he's pretty over the top and pretty silly for most of the episode, but he can also kind of pull at your heartstrings a little bit too. So I love him. He's very, very amusing to me and very entertaining. And he makes that episode for me. So that's why he's my number eight.
Another Darren Morgan choice.
Darren Morgan choice.
I mean, you said everything. I think he's got really great chemistry with both David and Jillian. Like, all of their scenes, like you said, were just gold. They played off each other so well. He was humorous and slightly over the top, but like, it still fit with the X-Files humor, and it fit very specifically with the humor of this episode. So like, I don't know if you could have put him in like a Clyde Bruckman or something like that and he would have been able to play it, but like, he did this perfectly. And he was definitely one that came very, very, very close to my list. So great choice. And I'm really glad that you picked him.
Nice. I'm glad you approve. All right. What is your number eight?
My number eight, a lot of these I feel like we have talked about already, but that's why they're on the list.
Yeah, that's all right.
Paula Sorge, who plays Jin in Je Souhaite.
I'll let you do all the Spanish pronunciations if I'm allowed to do the French ones.
Okay, perfect.
I'm going to jump in for a second and say she's number five on my list.
Oh, good.
And I thought for sure you would not have her for some reason. So she's one that we have in common. So I'm glad that we get to talk about her.
That's funny, because Je Souhaite is one of my very favorite episodes. She's great. And you know what I think makes her even greater is that she's one of those that, like, you kind of know the backstory that, like, they were trying to get Janine Garofalo and then they couldn't get her. And so, like, Paula Sorge came in and you're thinking, oh, well, this could have been Janine Garofalo. But it doesn't matter, because I think she does the role better than I think Janine Garofalo would have done. I feel like Janine Garofalo, it's hard for me to describe the difference, but, like, Paula Sorge has a slight more of a twinge of, like, seriousness to her that makes the silliness of this episode just believable enough. I feel like casting Janine Garofalo might have been a mistake. Like, it might have been a little too over the top. And that's just, like, my take. And I love her to death. Don't get me wrong. But I just feel like this is one of those situations where I feel like it was, like, a happy accident. Like, they cast maybe their second choice, but she turned out to be perfect. She's so great and funny. And, that scene where she just... I don't even know if it's in the script. I would love to know if it's in the script. But when, like, Leslie and Anson Stokes are, like, talking about the wishes, and she's just, like, kind of, like, idly picking up the boob remote control. She's kind of looking at it and, like, making disgusted faces. And, like, it's all the stuff that's probably not scripted. It's like she just owned that role and she did such a great job with it. Like, the humor and her like, gesturing at the wheelchair, like, huh? Like, how about this? And, like, even just her dry, like, oh God, turn invisible, please. Like, just please. And everything about her was just perfect. She did such a great job. And so I know you have things to say about her as well. So that's my number eight.
I agree with you, obviously, 100% on everything you've said. I'd love her, I guess, three positions more. She's number five on my list, perhaps because her name and my name are the same. And even spelled the same, J-E-N-N, in the credits. Yeah. Yay, we have a special link. And, yeah, I just really love her. Again, she makes that episode, I think. The brothers are pretty great, too. But she's a great contrast to the sort of bumbling brothers. She's just so, like, she's so cool. She's just got a very cool vibe. And just sort of, like, blasé, and she's just kind of over it all, and she's sort of snarky and just really funny at the same time, like you say, that kind of dry sense of humor. And she just plays it just perfectly. She just, it's very like, you know, almost like underplayed. She's not overdoing anything, but it really works. Mm-hmm. And she is just hilarious. She's just naturally very, very funny, I think. And again, she sort of like we were just talking about with Reggie in Forehead Sweat. There's also a little bit of a hint of like tragedy, an undertone of tragedy to her story as well, that she's had to be this genie. And, you know, when Mulder's asking her what her wish would have been, and she, you know, she starts off by saying, I wish I'd never heard the word wish before. And it's kind of heartbreaking that when she talks about, you know, what her wish would be. So she's hilarious. She's cool. She's interesting. And she's kind of a little heartbreaking at the same time. So pulling all that off, I agree. I'm not sure that Janine Garofalo would have hit all those notes. She might have played it in a different way that would have been, you know, charming in its own way. But the way that Paula Sorge played it was great for me, and I loved it. So I don't watch Your Sweat as often as I should probably, because damn, that's a fine episode. And she is so, so great in it. So yay, I'm so glad you picked her.
You know, I wanted to add to it, Scully gives her such a hard time in the episode. Probably, yes. I feel like probably it's possible that maybe there's like a slight jealous vibe going on there. Like, you're not really a genie. Why is he spending all this time with you? Like that sort of thing. But I also think that like, and it's which I think is fine, because they're obviously like already sleeping together at that point. So she's allowed to be a little territorial of her man.
Totally. I mean, it's fair enough.
But I think that I think Scully and Jen would probably get along. Like, I really think, because I feel like Scully would be like, you're full of shit. And Jen would be like, well, I don't fucking care if you think I'm full of shit. Who cares? Fine, go ahead, believe. And they'd be like, whatever. All right, cool, let's go out for beers. Like, I feel like they could totally get along. And so
that would have been awesome.
I would have loved it. I would have loved to see it. But, you know, anyway, just wanted to throw that out there, because I think they weirdly would have gotten along if she had given her half a chance. Just saying.
I think that is a really great point, because, Scully is not in that episode as much as I wish she was. But Jen definitely has that sure, fine, whatever vibe going on that Scully so often has. I love the idea of there being a scene with like Scully and Jen both kind of making fun of Mulder and like being snarky about him. Mm-hmm. And that would be hilarious,
right?
Like, with Mulder right there, preferably. So that would be like, that would be funny. So that's another fic that someone needs to write now. So they would have been great together. A bit of a lost opportunity perhaps, but we only have so many minutes to pack in a lot. There was a lot going on in Your Sweat. But
this was in no way a critique of the episode, just an observation of the characters. That's all.
It would have been very, very cool to see them together. So that's why fanfic has to help us out on that one. But it was great. It's a great role, brilliantly played. She looks amazing in it. The costuming is great. She's got like the black leather and the sunglasses and the straight black hair and everything. And it's a very cool look, and it fits her perfectly. And great choice, great role, great actress.
Awesome. So I think then we are now on to your number 7.
We are, I think. So my number 7 is probably one of the better known, I think, guest roles. It's from season 6. The episode is Drive. And the actor is Bryan Cranston, who played Patrick Crump.
Also on my list, higher.
All right, excellent. Mm-hmm. So, I had a feeling this one, there was a decent chance that there'd be some crossover on this one, because he is so good. I mean, that episode is really, he has a lot to do in that episode. The episode is his story, and he's not a likable character. He does some very unpleasant things, says some very unpleasant things. He's very angry. He's very mean. But, you know, over the course of the episode, we still come to sympathize for him just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's not like some kind of goofy redemption arc for him, but we do see the humanity in him a little bit, largely because we're seeing him through Mulder's eyes. And of course, if we discussed before, Mulder has this sort of, he can always see the good in people, and he cares about people, especially people who have been victimized, which Mulder comes to believe that Crump has been by the government. And we feel for that. We kind of get that. And also, I also just want to mention the fact that he's in physical pain for the entire episode. And boy, howdy, it feels like my head's going to explode when I watch this episode, because he plays that really, really well. I mean, he has to play this fairly complex character. And the whole time he has to be in incredible pain. And he does an amazing job of all of those things at once, which can't have been easy to pull off. And it's just very, very impressive. And of course, we know that Bryan Cranston went on to star in Breaking Bad, which again, written by Vince Gilligan, who wrote this episode. And no wonder Vince Gilligan said, hey, I'm going to take that guy and put him in my show because I would have done the same after this.
Yeah, I mean, I think about that all the time. And like Breaking Bad is, in my opinion, and I know I'm on an X-Files podcast, but Breaking Bad, in my opinion, is the greatest television show of all time in terms of how well done it is. And it's perfect from start to finish. I could go on and on about Breaking Bad forever. It's amazing. And I feel like this is one of those things. If Bryan Cranston hadn't been in this random X-Files episode that turned out to be great, we would never have gotten Breaking Bad. And like, I think about that often. I really do. I go, wow, how lucky we are that he just said, okay, I'll play Patrick Crump. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's amazing.
And it just happened.
He wasn't even like a big deal at the time, right?
No,
like,
I don't think he was. I had a look at his IMDb today and he had done lots of different roles, but he became bigger after this because his big role, I think that most people would know him from before Breaking Bad at that time, was Malcolm in the Middle,
right?
And that came after this, like right after this, I think.
Okay, so this was before that. I didn't really know in terms of timing because I never watched that show. But he's higher on my list. He's my number four. So, everything that you said, and again, not any opportunity I can take to like pump up Duchovny's acting, I will take it because I feel like Mulder does a great deal as well, getting us to feel empathy for this guy. Or I should say David does. And it works. It's a great Mulder episode. I think it's also a great Scully episode. It's one of those rare ones where they're apart most of it. Yeah. I love both of their stories and how they're both kind of working together but separately. It's a really, really great episode. But I mean, back to Bryan Cranston because it's what we're talking about. But yeah, I also have this really weird issue like with my ears. Like I have a weird ear phobia thing, and so when I watch this episode, it super like affects me and it's so authentic. Like the way that he's reacting, and it's just painful to watch. And again, it's like all this stuff that you think that they're doing it so effortlessly. They really are.
Yeah.
Both of them. And they had David and Bryan Cranston both had really great chemistry. I just would watch them in the car the entire episode if I had to. I mean, I love the Scully scenes, but such a good role for him. Great. Yeah. I mean, I don't really have much more to add that you didn't already say, but it was a fantastic pick.
I'm going to admit something today. Remember the time that I admit I hadn't ever seen Mary Poppins? Today I'm going to admit I've never seen Breaking Bad. Not one episode.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But it's not too late though, right? I mean, it must be streaming somewhere.
It is too late. And you know what? It is lockdown and you need to make that a priority. Yes.
I don't know why I didn't. I can't explain it. I can't explain why I've never seen it, but for some reason I haven't.
I want you to do that. And we're going to be talking about that later off mic, but that's going to happen. And I would.
Okay.
I want you to at least watch the first.
Chastened.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to, because it really is fantastic television. It really is.
How many seasons am I getting myself into with that?
I think it's like six. Technically like six and a half, seven. Like the
they're
last
not like
one.
20 episode seasons.
No. They're short seasons. It's doable. Okay. And you will cruise through it. I promise. It's so good.
All right. I think you've convinced me. I don't know why. I mean, it won all the awards. So obviously it's highly regarded. And am I right in thinking that I will not be disappointed by the ending? Because I've heard that it actually ends pretty okay.
I wasn't.
Okay. Because I'm not going to get to the end and say, well, what the fuck was that?
No, it's nothing like that. I think
that encourages me.
There are outliers, but I think it's widely regarded as a great series finale. So,
which you don't often, there's not a lot of those.
There aren't
there's
a lot of
not a lot of shows that end well.
Like I'm, like I say, that, it doesn't,
that side, it is one that does.
It doesn't have any like lulls really either. Like it's great from start to finish, which I mean, I love obviously the X-Files, but I can't say that about the X-Files, you know, whereas I can say that about Breaking Bad. Definitively, that it was strong from start to finish. And Vince Gilligan clearly learned so much from the X-Files. I mean, you can see the things that he learned from the X-Files and took and put into Breaking Bad, which I always find fun.
Right. Well, I mean, I love Vince Gilligan episodes of the X-Files, so I'm just destined to enjoy that, I think. So that sounds really good. And I think that perhaps Breaking Bad is a good example of a show that had the right number of episodes.
Yeah. He definitely did learn that from the X-Files, too, that it's when it's time to stop, you need to stop.
When it's time to stop. And you don't have to fill out 22, 25 episodes a season. So that makes it easier, too. So, you know, this wasn't really a thing in the 90s. The idea of shows that only have, you know, 10 or 13 episodes, that was like a cable TV thing that's relatively recent. So it definitely gives you an opportunity to tell a story differently. Yeah. And so anyway, that's just a little aside.
It's worthy aside. I hope I've convinced you, and if I hope I've convinced other people too as well. So.
Yeah, and I just remembered that there are, from what I can recall, some strong supporting actresses in that show too. Yeah, so, which is also really important. I think I tend to think of it as like it's all guys, but I just recalled that I think like there were actresses winning awards for this too. So.
No, it's great all around. Lots of great actors and actresses. Yeah.
Nice little side trip there, but it was X-Files related, so, and very Bryan Cranston and Vince Gilligan related. So
Vince Gilligan will definitely come up again tonight, so it's okay that we're talking about him.
That's great. I mean, he's a very, very talented man.
Yeah.
What is your number seven then, Annie?
My number seven might surprise you, and it kind of surprised me too how quickly this character jumped to the top of my list.
All right.
The Revival.
Yes.
Tad O'Malley. Joel McHale.
Jeez, I am surprised. I didn't even think of him.
Yeah. So I remembered really with all of the disappointments about My Struggle One. And there were many. But this wasn't one of them for me. I think that the idea of putting on this sort of right wing conspiracy nut guy to go toe to toe with Mulder was a brilliant idea. Like, my only complaint was that I wish they'd gone harder. Like, I wish they had. I wish they would have kept him in a more interesting role moving forward, because he kind of disappeared after My Struggle 1. He came back from My Struggle 2 briefly, and he was also briefly in my Struggle 4, I think, and also in Nothing Lasts Forever, just teeny tiny little bits, like they have him talking on the radio. Yeah. So they kept his presence kind of alive, but it was kind of unnecessary at the end of the day. Like, so when I say I wish that they had kind of pushed harder, I feel like he could have been a bigger player, like later, like, or even like a more interesting character. I think Joel McHale did such a great job with this character. Like, I just find it really fun watching him play this guy that, like, I know he isn't. Like, and again, it's just a really kind of cool diversion, or that's not the right word, but like dichotomy to be watching of him playing this guy. And I don't think it was necessary for him to be like hitting on Scully, but I didn't mind it because she's Scully. Of course he's going to hit on her. That didn't really bother me either. I thought it was kind of an interesting little nugget that they stuck into the episode and then didn't really do anything with it. Just kind of put it in there to, but you know what I mean? They just kind of put it in there to make your brain go a little crazy. And I thought that was kind of fun. And I think he did a great job. He had a really tough job to do to come into the Revival episode one and take a great deal of it onto his shoulders. Like, he had a big role in that first episode. Like, he had a huge monologue with Mulder, like right next to Mulder, who we all know is the king of these sorts of conspiracy monologues. And he did it, man. Like, he did it really well. I think that those two, I would have watched the two of them in more, and I wish that we could have. It would have been really fun to see a sort of like almost like a love triangle type thing, not like an actual love triangle, but it would have been fun to see him react a little bit more to that, because he didn't really get to. And that's like, it's kind of like, what's the fun of that if they don't really get to react to each other? That's kind of my whole issue with it. But that has nothing to do with his performance, which I think was fantastic. So Tad O'Malley, Joel McHale, that's my number seven.
That's a really great choice. Like I say, it never even occurred to me for some reason. I mean, I was kind of, you know, thinking in my head, who are the guest stars that I remember? And for some reason, he didn't come to mind, but I think you've made an excellent case. And yeah, his best episode sort of character-wise is I think My Struggle 1. They don't do enough with him really in the other My Struggles after that. But he's great in My Struggle 1, and you're right. He's really key to that episode. It's the first episode of the Revival.
Yeah.
He's right there, essentially, in Mulder and Scully have a very brief scene together at the beginning of that episode before he's on the scene with them. So he's with them in the room a lot during that episode. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very key character. He plays it very well. I think it was a clever idea to bring in kind of a right-wing conspiracy nut in that episode as part of the revival because of the sort of contrast between how conspiracy nuts were regarded in the 90s and how they're regarded today and what they sort of exemplify. And we tend to think of, you know, they're more the right-wing types now. Back in the day, they were just kind of weird nerds. So it was a good idea to cast a character like him to kind of establish what a conspiracy theorist looks like today.
Yeah.
But, you know, he wasn't like, he's not a lovable character by any means, but, you know, he's interesting.
He's charming. Scully wasn't wrong. Yeah.
He's quite charming. He's intelligent, obviously, well-informed, mm-hmm. you know, Mulder tries to trip him up and can't.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm kind of rooting a little bit for Tad. And, you know, I did quite like Tad O'Malley, and I agree that I would like to have seen more of him. And he's very sort of charismatic, and he plays that role perfectly of a guy that makes his living discussing conspiracy theories and convincing people of them. And you got to have someone who seems kind of slick and quite charismatic and would sort of draw people in, and he's all of those things. And yeah. He's very well cast for that reason. And yeah, I agree. I love Joel McHale as well. And yeah, he to me would not have been an obvious choice for that role.
Yeah.
But it's a great choice and he did a great job. So good choice.
It's interesting too. I mean, I know for the sake of the story, they had to kind of make him a bit of an ally in My Struggle 4. But I often wonder how different they could have used him and really gone hard against him in season 11 because of how much the tone had changed of the show, mm-hmm. like how much the political climate had changed, how much the direction of the writing had changed. And I feel like if they had used him more in season 11, we could have gotten some really good, humorous, biting content out of it. And they didn't. And that was kind of a little bit of a disappointment. But, you know, it is what it is. And I still think he did a great job in My Struggle 1. So,
yeah. Absolutely. And like you say, really, really a key character in a key episode, and he nailed it. And that was important because if they had cast someone differently in that role, it could have been boring or worse, a disaster. And that would have been it was not the strongest episode, obviously, of the revival. But thank goodness, at least they nailed that casting because that would have been problematic if they hadn't. So thank goodness they got something right. Mm-hmm. And I don't dislike My Struggle 1 that much, but.
Yeah, same. I don't really either, but yeah.
It's the best of the struggles, which is not saying much. But, you know, it's an okay episode, but, you know, I probably feel that way because of Joel McHale. I probably wouldn't feel that way if they had cast somebody differently. He brings a lot to that episode. So. Yeah. And I love that character. It's a pretty cool and interesting character. So, yeah, great choice. Glad you thought of him. Are we on to number six now?
We are. You're number six.
My number six is a fellow that you and I know. We've spoken to him before, and he's been on this very podcast. His name is Larry Musser.
Larry.
And we love Larry. And I love him as a very awesome guy, but also I love him on The X-Files, and you got to get extra points when you've been on three different roles on The X-Files that are quite substantial roles.
Technically four, but yes.
Technically four, but three sort of the memorable ones.
Yeah.
I think probably the one that people remember him most for is Jose Chung's From Outer Space, where he plays Detective Manners, who says bleepity bleep and blankety blank a lot. And he's very sort of, you know, grouchy, but he's very funny. He's mm-hmm. very funny in that episode and in that kind of, you know, deadpan way. Hilarious. Unrequited, he's got a pretty big role in that as this sort of militia group leader called Denny Markham. He's kind of like a tough guy in that one and doing kind of a very sort of like a cool American accent, sort of slightly Southern, and does it very well. And then in Shinga, we get him as police chief Jack Bonsant, and he's very sort of folksy and pleasant, and he can wrestle a huge lobster, and he's great with Jillian in that. So he plays very different roles. He plays them all really well. He's really awesome. I love him, especially in Jose Chung. He's probably, I think, to me, the funniest character in that episode. And there's a lot of funny characters in that episode. And the fact that we get to see him a couple more times and that he's awesome every time helps, as does the fact that he was good enough to come on our show and talk all about them with us. And the fact that he obviously still has a lot of love in his heart for The X-Files as a show and X-Files as people. And I appreciate that, too. So Larry Mustard, number 6 on my list.
That's a great pick. I had a feeling, Jen, that you might pick Larry. So yeah, that's why he didn't make my list. But he would have been very, very close. I think what's so great about him is, like you said, just the diverse nature of all his different roles. Like, it's he got to do so many different things. And he's lucky to have been able to do that and do it really well. And I mean, gosh, if you haven't listened to our interview with Larry, you need to find it and go listen to it, because he was just a delight to talk to. So.
He really was, told great stories. And you know that he must have been a really good guy to work with. They wouldn't have kept asking him back. So obviously he really made a great impression on the producers of The X-Files. And no wonder, he's a cool guy. And yeah, those are just really great roles. And he's a cool guy too. So that's why he's my number 6. What is your number 6, Annie?
My number 6, kind of a deep cut, but I think very worthwhile. This is from the season 5 episode Mind's Eye. The character Marty Glenn, played by Lily Taylor.
Nice.
Who I think is probably one of my favorite roles in that was like that you focus on for quite a bit. Like, you know, I know you have, there's one I don't want to name because I have a feeling this person might be on your list coming up, but it's a similar thing. Like, it's an episode that sort of centers around this person and not so much around Mulder and Scully. Right. And I know they do that from time to time. It's not like a rare thing, but I think she's so great in this episode. And I think she has really good chemistry, not like romantic sexual chemistry, but just really good chemistry with both Mulder and Scully. Like, they both, the vibes that she's giving off with both of them are so clear, and she's having to play obviously a blind woman, and the way and that must be really hard to play. Like, it must be hard. And she played it really convincingly. She was actually nominated for an Emmy for this role, which I didn't know until I was doing a little bit of research on her. But she did such a great job. And I love how you really, really want to hate her, but you can't for some reason. And that's really hard to play. That's really hard to play. And we don't even know what's going on half the time throughout this episode. It's like, she might be involved. Like, she seems to be somehow involved. Something's going on. And we don't really know quite how innocent or not innocent she is until the story starts to unravel. But we, again, David, he takes us through this episode. We again believe him. We want to believe him. And he wants to believe that she didn't do it. And she's trying as hard as she can to be awful, but he's not buying it. And I think that's such a really cool dynamic that we don't really get to see. I can't think of another character, like a tertiary character, you know, that Mulder or Scully interacts with, who is trying so hard to not be liked. And Mulder wants to like them. Like, I think that she did such a great job. I really like this episode. It's just a great little episode that I think people forget about. And then every time I watch it, I'm like, yeah, this is really good. And another random little connection. She was apparently in Mystic Pizza with Annabeth Gish. So I just thought that was a kind of a funny little connection that maybe
that's
later.
Cool.
Yeah. How somehow they ended up with Annabeth Gish on the show. So I just wanted to point that out. So, yeah, number 6, nice. Lily Taylor.
That's a great choice. I briefly considered her. The only reason I didn't pick her, I think, was because I thought, it's been so long since I've watched Mind's Eye, I'd have to watch the whole episode, and I don't really have time right now.
Oh, yeah, you should, though. That's great.
Yeah, you've just convinced me that now I will go back, and now that I have some time tonight, I'll watch that episode, because I do remember liking it, but it is one that I don't think of that often and don't watch very often, but I do remember liking it, and I do remember liking her role, and you've made a very convincing case that she definitely deserved to be on this list, because it is a really tricky role to play, and it is challenging on a lot of levels, and yeah, she pulls it off. And the fact that we're still interested in what happens to her is again a credit to the writing and to the acting. And Yeah, she's really, really cool. So, yeah, I'm definitely going to go back and rewatch that episode because it's been ages since I've watched it. And, yeah, people do tend to kind of forget about it. Remind me again what season that one is.
It's a sleeper. It's in season 5.
That's a season 5 one. Okay.
Yeah, near the end of season 5.
All right, yeah.
But, yeah, definitely right, check it out.
I'm going to go look that up. I'm going to go scroll to season 5, and I think I'm going to watch that tonight. So thank you for reminding me about that awesome episode because, yeah, there's a lot of those episodes that we as a fandom tend to overlook. There's a lot that we remember really clearly. There's a lot that we overlook probably for good reason, but there's also a certain number of episodes that we tend to overlook that we shouldn't. And I think that's one of them. So thanks for that.
I think another reason a lot of people overlook it is there really aren't very many, if any, real MSR moments in this one. It's not really one where I can recall, although there is a great scene where you can tell Mulder's kind of inwardly comparing Scully to Marty. He's kind of talking about her, but Scully has a look like that she knows he's talking about Scully. And it's a really great little, very kind of subtle moment that you could not catch if you aren't really sort of a fan or you're not really sort of paying attention. But I think that's a really nice moment in terms of MSR moment that stand out to me in that episode. But I think that's probably a reason people don't tend to remember it, even though it's a great episode. So.
Yeah. No, I think that's great. I'm going to watch it definitely with my stripper goggles on, and I will be watching for that moment. So I watch everything with my stripper goggles on. Are we on number 4 now?
Actually,
we're on number 5.
We're on number 5.
I already had my number 5 because it was Paul LaSorge as Jen in Je Souhaite. So on to your number 5 then, Annie.
My number 5. So my number 5 probably should be higher. It's probably a number 1 on a lot of people's lists. But I picked a lot of personal things 1 through 4. And so my number 5 is Peter Boyle.
Oh, yes. He's on my list.
Of course. Clyde Bruckman's Final Repose. I think that very few files would not have him on their list of best guest appearances. I mean, he won an Emmy, obviously. And I remember that story that he told when he actually, Darren Morgan had never met him until the night that he actually won an Emmy for this role that he wrote, that he played, which I thought was really kind of funny. But Clyde Bruckman is just such, or I should say Peter Boyle is such a perfect example of an actor that comes in and really just takes a part and makes it his own. And you are actually more interested in that character than you are in Mulder and Scully while you're watching the episode. I mean, I could say that with complete sincerity that when I'm watching that episode, I want to get back to him. Like I want to go back to Peter Boyle. And he's just so good. He has the perfect mix of like humor and seriousness, and like suddenly he's just like so nihilistic and you're like, who is this guy? I want to know more about this guy. And it's sad at the end when he kills himself. Like it's definitely, because it's, I feel like this is one of those sort of slightly humorous episodes, but it's also so dark, but in such a beautiful way. And I feel like he did such a great job getting all of those things into one role. And obviously people agreed who gave him an Emmy because he was just outstanding. And I mean, I don't really have much more to say about it other than like, because so much has already been said about it, but he is my number 5, Peter Boyle, Clyde Bruckman. Yeah. You know, you have more probably.
I mean, I obviously 100% agree with everything you've said. He's number 3 on my list. Mm. He's just very, very good. And yeah, he's one of those ones that I thought he's kind of an obvious choice. There's a good chance you're going to have him on your list, but I'm not going to not have him on my list because he just belongs there. You can't put a top 10 list of guest stars because his was literally the first thing that popped into my head when we decided we were going to do this subject. And I thought he's got to be there.
Yep.
And he's great. There's no way around it. He's got to be on the list. He is that great combination of the sort of very ordinary guy with this sort of like really sort of macabre ability and the way, and it's, you know, he's funny and snarky and with that, in that deadpan way. But he's very sort of sad. It's a sad character as well. And it's just, it's very understated and very well done. And there's just a lot going on in that performance. There's a lot going on with that character. And he does some very cool things. Nihilistic, that's a great word, and that's perfect for how he is as well. And he is just very intriguing. He's in the cold open. He starts off the episode. And yeah, from the very beginning, he's just got that presence that makes you, he brings that character to life in a way that I can't imagine anyone else could have. And it's another really brilliantly written Darren Morgan character. Darren Morgan, I think, tends to write very, very good guest roles.
Yeah.
He's got a really great talent for just writing really well fleshed out characters who only appear in one episode. And this is a great example of it. Clive Bruckman's Final Repose on any given day, today probably, I'd say, is my favorite Darren Morgan episode, just because it is so dark, but like you say, in a beautiful way and funny at the same time, in a very sort of understated way. And it's Peter Boyle is at the heart of that episode and probably why I like it so much. And yeah. He's just very, very good. And of course, he went on to sort of fame in Everybody Loves Raymond, was probably his most sort of best known role. And I do believe that came after this.
I think you're right.
So again, this was kind of like someone who went on to great sort of acclaim and played that role for years and became, you know, very well known for it. And, you know, the folks who cast The X-Files obviously recognized his talent as well. And he was introduced to X-File fans before most people knew who he was. And he was awesome in it. Passed away in 2006. He was still working up until, you know, he died at the age of 71. He was still working at that point and put out a lot of really great stuff. And he was a great actor, and the X-Files were really fortunate to have him when they did. And he was amazing in this role. And this is, I think, when you ask sort of like critics in general what they think the best episode of The X-Files was, they often mention this one. And Peter Boyle, I think, is a very big reason for why they do. But Peter Boyle, Darren Morgan, the combination of those two great talents made that episode really great. So obviously, I agree with you 100%.
Awesome. So
I think that was my number three.
Yeah, but I think we're actually, that was my five. So
that was your five. So now we're on to my four.
Your four.
If everyone's following along on your bingo card under the B, number four. Okay, this one probably won't be a surprise to folks that have listened to the podcast faithfully, which I hope everyone does. For number four, I picked another role from the revival, from the episode Nothing Lasts Forever, Fiona Vroom as Barbara Beaumont.
Oh, good one. I actually forgot how much you love Barbara Beaumont, but she's so good.
Oh, my God. I do love Barbara Beaumont. She was one of my top 13 baddies for our top baddies show. I talked about her a fair bit. But again, I couldn't not put her on my list because I just love her so much. I think Fiona Vroom brings so much to this role. Little shout out to the fact that she's a Canadian actress as well, from Vancouver. And it's just, it's sort of slightly over the top role, but it's appropriate for that episode. She plays it right. You know, she's got this kind of low, cutesy, girly little girl kind of weird vibe going on. But then she's also really scary and like terrifying at the same time. And she somehow, to me, makes it work. I know that not everyone loves that episode or loves that role, but I do. I wrote in my notes that I would join her cult because to me, she's like super charismatic. I think when we talked about her on the Batty Show, I called her something like charismatic insanity or something like that. Because that is her vibe, charismatic insanity. And I can't take my eyes off her when she's on screen.
It sounds like a perfume.
Charismatic insanity. It's going to be my perfume. And charismatic insanity for
hashtag
her.
Hashtag for her.
I'm going to get Fiona Vroom to be the spokesperson for my new scent, charismatic insanity for her, because she's so great in this episode, in this role. Again, my favorite scene is when she sings The Morning After whilst, like, people's blood is on her lips. And she just pulls that off so well. And I learned today, I think we discussed before, was that really her singing? And I learned today she spent a lot of time singing on cruise ships as part of her career. So I'm quite willing. I always thought it sounded like it was her singing, and now I'm even more certain that it is. Ugh. And it sounds to me like she's singing live on set. I'm still not totally sure about that, but it does sound like that to me. And I think she just like sings the hell out of that song, and it's in this very sort of gory setting. That is not that easy to pull off, and she makes it sort of like interesting and terrifying and awful and almost funny at the same time. And I just really love Fiona Vroom. I think she's awesome, and I think Barbara Beaumont is a very compelling character, so she's my number four.
I would love to see like the backstory of that character, like how did this cult start? Like, how did it all come out? Like, did she obviously had some sort of fall from grace? I like this. There's like a huge fic to be written here, and I'm here for it.
I'm gonna have to think about that.
She's great, and I agree with you. She's one of those unsung heroes of the revival because I often forget how great she was. Like, often forget about her because when I think of Nothing Lasts Forever, like I really just kind of only think of the Mulder Scully scenes.
Yeah, even which though. Are so good.
Yeah, even though that entire episode I think is really good and it's a good X-Files episode and like the scary stuff is fine, but Barbara Beaumont makes it work. And shout out to Fiona Vroom, who also played young Cassandra Spender in the revival.
Yeah.
In a little bit of a flashback. Anyway, she's great. Great choice. And I actually forgot that you loved her so much. So I was pleasantly surprised to hear her on your list.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Hopefully the listeners have forgotten too, because I thought, am I going to be like super obvious about this? So that's good. I had to put her on my list. I love her very much. I think she's just a really kind of cool person. And that's one of my favorite episodes. So Barbara Beaumont. I just like saying her name too. And Fiona Vroom is a pretty awesome name as well. So I love Fiona. I love Barbara. It's a great role, great actress. That is my number four. What is your number four, Annie?
Well, my number four was Bryan Cranston, who we already talked about. So you get to keep going, Jen.
My number three is Peter Boyle. So on to your number three,
then. Look at that. Look how quickly we went past.
Number three.
My number three, okay. My number three is very special to me. But all of my top three are very special to me. So these were kind of hard to rank. My number three is from the season six episode, The Unnatural, Jesse L. Martin.
Right.
I love him so much. And again, this is another one of those rare ones that like, this is one of my favorite episodes. Obviously, it has some great MSR moments, obviously. But I don't just love it because of those. Like, everyone's like, okay, well, it's got that cool beginning and it's got that cool end and I could just take or leave whatever's in the middle. And that's not me at all. I love this story. I find it very compelling, very well told. Also could just be, I really, for the most part, mesh with David's writing style. Like, I've enjoyed all his books that I've read. And other than Hollywood AD, which I didn't really care for, I think that The Unnatural was sort of his piece de resistance in terms of like an X-Files episode, because he took something he loved, which was baseball, and he turned it into this sort of really compelling tale about this alien who just wanted to stay on Earth to love because he loved baseball. And I mean, it's so great. And Jesse L. Martin was such a perfectly cast character because he's so likable. He's so adorable. He has one of the most adorable smiles I've ever seen in my entire life. Josh Exley, great character. I love his quote unquote chemistry with the actor who I can't think of his name right now, who played Arthur Dales, young Arthur Dales. Mm-hmm. He played him in Travelers, I believe, too. But this episode, I think, far exceeds that one in terms of entertainment and just quality. But he also, something about Jesse L. Martin, which I love, he was on, obviously, Law & Order, and he was very famous for Rent, who he actually created one of those characters or originated one of those characters on Rent.
Yes.
And apparently, David Duchovny saw him on Ally McBeal, which I used to watch like all the time, but this show and everything about it has left my brain. It is just gone. Like, yeah. I don't remember.
Some shows are like that.
You know, like, and I remember loving it at the time, but I don't remember anything about it. But I do remember Jesse L. Martin playing one of Ally McBeal's love interests.
Okay.
And just falling in love with him then. And so, and this was before I was even watching The X-Files, obviously, because I wasn't watching it until a couple of years later. But that scene where he's on the bus and they're all singing and he's telling Dales about how he just fell in love, about the unnecessary and how it just sometimes it doesn't matter if it means anything. It just feels so good, you know, all this stuff. And like he carried that story so well. Love his performance. And he carries it all the way along right into that beautiful MSR scene at the end. So I don't know. I've just always been super attached to The Unnatural, and Jesse L. Martin is a huge part of that, so he's my number three.
Nice. Great pick. He was one of the ones that I wanted to get into my top 10 and couldn't, so I'm really glad that he's in yours. because he is great. He's just effortlessly charming, isn't he? That's just Jesse L. Martin is like that in every role that he plays, which is like a great gift to have as an actor. And plus
charismatic again. Yes.
Charismatic. He's just like on screen. You can't take your eyes off him on screen, on stage, wherever he is. He's just so talented, multi-talented. He doesn't age either, which is amazing. He looks exactly the same now as he did then.
He's very, very handsome.
He's very handsome. And yeah, he's a great choice for that role. And yeah, I think there is sometimes a tendency to forget that there is a really great plot in The Unnatural.
Yeah.
And he's at the heart of it. And you really definitely, you get really connected with him as a character. And yeah, Jesse L. Martin just has a real talent for that. So yeah, kudos to you. Great choice.
Yeah, that scene at the end where he's dying and he's just so concerned about hurting Arthur, like,
yeah,
it's and you don't see him behave that way the entire time, and he's just like so panicked and upset, and he's like crying, and I'm just like, where did this come from? Like, he really had a chance to really use his chops, and just great, just love him.
Yeah, like, wow, where did that come from? He's got so much talent just packed away in that hot little body of his.
Yes.
So yeah, it was great choice. I'm really glad you picked that.
Thanks.
That was your number three. Are we on to my number two?
Yeah, because your three was Peter Boyle, correct?
My three was Peter Boyle. All we are on to my number two.
Yep.
My number two is an actress that I've talked about before, but again, there was no way I was not going to put her on my list. So my number two from the season six episode Monday, it's Carrie Hamilton as Pam.
That was the one I knew that you were going to bring up.
You knew I was going to pick her, right?
Yep.
She's the Pam is sort of the emotional heart of this episode. It's kind of like a high concept episode, you know, with this, you know, repeating thing. But her performance, I think, really emotionally sort of anchors that episode. It could have just been kind of this cool concept, but it's more than that. And I think it's largely because of her performance that we care about her and her ordeal. I mean, Mulder and Scully keep getting like shot and blown up in this episode, but for some reason, when I watch it, all I care about is poor Pam, who's having such a hard time in all of this.
I know what you mean. It is weird because I mean, they're all their parts are just kind of light and humorous and just kind of going through their lives.
Yeah,
day to day. They're kind of oblivious. They're very oblivious. And we also kind of deep down, I think, know that they're going to be okay, but we don't know Pam's fate. Yeah,
we don't. And Carrie Hamilton makes us care about Pam's fate because she, again, to me, is one of those actors that when she's on screen, she just draws me in with her performance. Mm-hmm. I just really cared about her. She's got that kind of, she's very weary and resigned, but at the same time, she's still determined to try to change her fate. She never quite gives up. There's like a desperation. There's like a glimmer of hope all the time. But she's been beaten down so many times. You really get this vibe of this ordeal that she's going through. And I always remember the line when she says to Mulder, don't you see we're all in hell? I'm the only one who knows it. And that is just so heartbreaking. And that's kind of, that is emblematic of her whole story. And I just really think she does an amazing job. I just find her so watchable, so interesting, so heartbreaking. And I think she's a great actress. Carrie Hamilton is a great actress. She was a great actress. Sadly, she died 3 years after this episode at the age of 38 from cancer. So she didn't do many roles after The X-Files. This is one of the last ones, I think, that we have of her. And it's a gift. She was Carol Burnett's daughter, so people might see the resemblance there. Yeah. And when I heard that, I'm like, oh, yeah, I can kind of see that
I remember
now.
You blew my mind with that last time because I didn't know that.
Yeah. They were actually in a few things together, too, which is kind of cool. And I think that she was such a great choice in this role. Again, she obviously, she wasn't super well known as an actress, I don't think, at that stage. And I'm glad that they thought to get her in for this part because I think she's amazing in it. And I love Monday and I love it because of her and her performance and the character of Pam. And so that is my number two.
I have to say, I knew that was going to be on your list, so I have a feeling. I have a feeling I know what your number one is, and I'm anxious to see. And I'm thinking you probably know what my top two are because I've talked about them before. Or when I say them, you'll probably be like, "Oh yeah."
All right, we'll see. I think maybe I can guess, but I often think I can guess and I turn out to be wrong.
I know, it's true. I have a feeling though that I think I know your number one, and if it isn't, I'll be surprised. But I know I always say that and then I always get surprised. So we'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see.
This is going to be interesting. So I agree with you that at a certain point, you know, it's always hard with our top 10 lists to decide, you know, to what degree are these the 10 best, what we think of as the 10 best, or our 10 favorites, which are not necessarily exactly the same.
Yeah.
There tends to be, it's more or less the same, but for me, I just really love Carrie Hamilton. And so whether or not she'd be number two on most people's list of the best guest performances, I don't know, but I personally just really connect with her performance. So that's why she's as high as she is for me. It's hard to sort of explain. It just is.
Right. And these are always our favorites. It's not necessarily like which ones I think are best and deserve awards, because that would be a totally different list. So
yeah. It wouldn't be as exciting either.
Because, it wouldn't. You know, they'd probably be the same.
We're passionate about that. Yeah. These are the ones we're passionate about that we want to get other people sort of passionate about as well and think about in maybe a different way.
And you get, I think, more interesting ones that maybe most people might not think of. So, yeah.
Exactly. All right. So tell me your number two.
All right. Well, my number two, I feel like my number two and number one are so obvious, but not to the world, but to you or people listening. My number two is from season 9, the episode Improbable, Burt Reynolds.
All right. I thought if Annie doesn't put Burt Reynolds on her list, then something is wrong in the world. Yeah. So I'm glad that you picked him.
I mean, again, and these are the criteria that I used to pick these was all different. But like a lot of these are the ones that I feel like they carried the episode. Burt Reynolds was perfect. I can't think of a better person to play God, you know, like if you're going to have to do an X-File about God, let's pick a guy to play. Let's cast Burt Reynolds in a Hawaiian shirt. That is what you would do. And I mean, I remember the first time I watched this episode and I was like, what the fuck is this? Like, I didn't get it. And I was like, I don't understand this. And then I remembered, I thought about it a long time and I kept thinking about it. And Burt's performance is what drew me in and what made me go back to it and watch it again. And I was like, I love this. I love everything about it. I love his goofy lip syncing when he's looking around and you could tell he's having so much fun. I would have loved to, and he passed away last year, right? I believe it was last year or maybe 2 years ago. But I would have loved to find interviews of him and his experience on the show, because it seems like he just had so much fun. And the scene with him and Monica Reyes and Scully in the parking garage is probably one of my favorite humorous scenes in the show. It's so well done. It's a different kind of light. Like, it's so hard for me to watch any episode from season 9 and like feel happy, because like everything is shit for Scully, like, and I can't ever get that out of my mind. But for this episode I was able to do that, and I think it's because of Burt Reynolds' performance and the comedy that he brought to the episode. And perfect casting. I mean, I know we've talked about him before, so I don't really have too much more to say about him. I just love him. He's my number two.
He's great. I mean, he's such a star, right? Burt Reynolds he was one of a kind. He brought so much to the screen. He was just so charming, and he just had something about him that is unique to Burt Reynolds, and he brought it in spades for this role. This is like Burt Reynolds at his most Burt Reynolds in a lot of ways. He's just super charming and super interesting and funny. And yeah, that is a weird episode. I mean, we have a lot of weird X-Files episodes, but this was one that I was like you. It was too weird for me at the time. I mean, we'd seen a lot of shit by that time. We'd seen, you know, Darren Morgan episodes, Vince Gilligan episodes. But for some reason, this one, I just couldn't quite get my head around it. And I hadn't watched it for years until you talked about it a couple of times on the podcast. And I was like, okay, I better watch this. And somehow coming back to it, thinking, expecting it to be good instead of just weird, I think you can kind of watch that episode and come away from it thinking either that it's fabulous and brilliant, or it's just awful.
Yeah.
But once you kind of get it into your head, this is fabulous and brilliant, mm-hmm. then you're like, why couldn't I see this before?
Yeah.
It is fabulous and brilliant. Everything about it is, it's weird, but in kind of an ingenious way. Mm-hmm. And it's obviously a pretty out there, semi-experimental episode. I think I described it before as like the only episode of The X-Files that's a musical.
Yeah, pretty much.
And but it works, actually. You just have to kind of, yeah, it's just, being in season 9 probably didn't help it for me, but you got to come back to it and give it another try. And yeah, Burt Reynolds is just so great in that episode, and he's just a delight to watch.
Yeah, and you know, like what I was saying about how he kind of carries it is like, I often think about a lot of those season 9 episodes, like, and some of the good ones, because I know even though we talk trash about season 9, like, within, you know, hindsight, they're not as bad as they were, like, while we were slogging through them.
Yeah.
So if I go back and watch, and Improbable I don't put in that list because Improbable is one of my very favorite episodes. I love it. Mm-hmm. But, like, a lot of those episodes, you go back and you look at them with fresh eyes and you're like, okay, this isn't as bad as I remember. Like, this really isn't. It is quality television. It's just not what we wanted to see at the time. And so we were all just so angry about it. And that is perfectly valid. I went through it, too. It's valid for all of us. But this one was one of those that I remember, or I always think that, like, if Mulder were here, I don't think it would have made a difference. I think I would have liked it the exact same. If Mulder was in this episode with Scully, I mean, yeah, that would have been great. We would have loved it. But I really don't think it would have been like, oh, the episode would have been so much better with Mulder. I feel like we didn't really need Mulder to enjoy this episode. And that's because of Burt Reynolds. So,
yeah. Yeah, and he that scene especially that you mentioned with Jillian and Annabeth in the parking garage is so great. The three of them are just terrific together, and great chemistry all the way around. I mean, I got to think that I kind of imagine that they had him in mind when they wrote the episode. I don't know for that for sure, but I mean, he plays the part so well that I can't imagine it having been considered for anyone else. And yeah, I think season 9, if you go back and watch just one episode at a time randomly instead of trying to get through the whole season, which is what we had to live through at the time, it's much easier to take. So yeah, you go back, watch Improbable. It's a delight if you haven't watched it in a while or maybe never watched it. Don't believe everything about season 9. There are a couple of good episodes, and that is one of them, and it's quite delightful to watch. And yeah, we get some quite good content, quite good Monica and Scully content, and it's just, it's a solid little episode. And Burt Reynolds, brilliant.
Do you know what I just thought of, Jen? Tonight we've discussed two comedic episodes in a parking garage with a guest star that just owned that parking garage. So we have Brian Husky with Mulder and Scully, and we have Burt Reynolds with Scully and Reyes. I'd never made that parallel before, but that's...
I know. It's not an obvious one.
No.
But yeah, you take like two series regulars, throw in a guest star, put them in a parking garage,
a goofy scene.
Gold.
Yeah.
And a goofy scene.
Because we've had plenty of like dramatic scenes and people getting killed and beaten up in parking garages, but like chases in parking garages, but like never like kind of humorous episodes like that, or rarely.
Yeah, it is, because usually parking garages are places where people die on the X-Files. So it's nice to have fun stuff happening in parking garages, too. I've always said before that, you know, back in the day when I actually worked at my office instead of from home, at the end of every day, I would walk through, we have a parking garage underneath the building where I work. And every time I walk through the parking garage, I always feel like I'm on an episode of the X-Files and something really cool might happen at any moment.
Yeah.
It's just, parking garages is one of those things that will never be the same for me after The X-Files. And for a variety of reasons. Often dramatic, but sometimes comedic as well. It's great. I mean, obviously they are the delightfully cheap and easy to control places to shoot. So I understand why they show up as often as they do. But they always, The X-Files does great things for parking garages. I got to say it. And they're always really well lit and well done. And that's a great scene, great episode, great guest actor. We're on to number one now, aren't we?
We are on to number one.
You've got a number one. I've got a number one.
Do you think you know my number one?
I don't know. Okay. I kind of thought it might be Burt Reynolds.
Well,
I don't even wonder if it's the same as mine.
I don't think so. I think I know what yours is. And I think when I say mine, you're going to be like, oh, yeah. So let's hear yours and I'll tell you.
Guess mine before I say it for the giggles? Or do you want me just to say
it? I'll guess it.
Okay.
Is it a cheat? Is it two people?
Is it two people? It's not.
Okay, because I was going to guess Lily Tomlin.
Yeah, that would have been a good guess. That was one of the, Lily Tomlin and Ed Asner.
And Ed Asner. I was going to guess that duo.
I desperately wanted to get into my top 10 and couldn't quite.
Oh, wow. Okay, so I have no idea.
Shout out right now that they were both awesome in The Ghost of Christmas. But no, they didn't make it onto my list. Okay. So
all right, let's hear it.
To me, this person is, you cannot do this list without this person being on it. And you can't do it without them being number one, no matter who's doing the list. I think that I was compelled to.
All right.
So my number one is what I would consider the queen, Karen Carnival.
Oh.
does that surprise you?
It doesn't surprise me because she's fantastic, but she was one of the ones that just barely didn't make my list. And so I feel it's just interesting to me that, like, I bet you thought that she would be on mine. And,
I thought she would, because I know how much you love Home, especially. So I thought
she came very, very close. But I mean, I talk about Home so much. I was just like, let's do it.
It's my turn to talk about Home. So Karen Carnival, she's the queen. Either Home or, she started off as the fortune teller, Madame Zelma, mm-hmm. in Clyde Ruckman, which is a very brief but quite good role.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Peacock in Home, and of course Chuck and Judy Poundstone in Plus One, back again in the revival. I think either her role in Home or her role in Plus One would have been enough to get her onto the list. The fact that she did both of those roles, that's what elevates her to the role of queen in my books. I mean, Chuck and Judy Poundstone especially, I've said before, that's essentially four roles that she's playing, because each of those two characters have like two personalities.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that I think I actually got through the entirety of Plus One without realizing that that was Karen Carnival playing both of those roles.
Yeah.
The fact that I didn't even notice that says how great she is. And, you know, hearing her talk about how she defined those roles and the little things she did as an actress to try to distinguish between, like, the good Judy and the bad Judy, the good Chucky and the bad Chucky, was so interesting. She just really devotes herself to the craft. You can tell she gives it more than she absolutely has to, and I appreciate that. And she's just very, very good. She's just great. She's, again, just, like, fascinating to watch. She's a really cool person. She's still getting jobs, which is great. She's still working actress. She's obviously Hollywood has figured out that she's amazing in everything she does, and she just brings a lot to it. And so when it comes to guest characters and guest actors, for me, I had to pick her because she's amazing, and I know she's very cool with the fans as well, which I also appreciate. And I think she's just a very cool person and an amazing, accomplished actress. So that's why she's my number one.
Great pick. And look, there's really no excuse for me to not have her on my list, because,
okay.
I mean, and I think she's fantastic in Plus One, but for Home alone, not the Macaulay Culkin, but, you know, she would be on there. But I feel like, I swear to God, Jen, every single time we make these lists, like, my number one's always like, whatever the Home choice is. It's like, okay, it's from Home. Of course it's from Home, because Annie loves Home. So I actually made an active decision not to. And I forgot while we were doing this that you hadn't said her yet, but I assumed that you might pick her as well. So I was like, okay, I could leave her off. But it was one of those heartbreakers, because she definitely belongs on this list. And I think she's quite worthy of being number one. So well done. Great pick.
Thanks. Yeah, I love her. Shout out to Karen. She's an awesome person.
Yeah, yeah. Jeez. I mean, there's really not much else to say that we haven't already said.
I'm trying to figure out what your number one is, and I'm feeling stumped.
It's funny because I feel like it's so predictable, because I feel like I've said this multiple times that, like, this is my favorite guest appearance on the show. And I think once I say it, you're going to be like, oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's hear it.
Michael McKean, Dreamland.
Oh, of course. I should have thought of that.
I always just love, I love Morris Fletcher. He's so creepy and he's so funny and he's so charming in this horrible way. And he plays this role so well that he's just always my favorite. And I actually just have like a super soft spot for Michael McKean in general. So he's always higher up on my list anyway, because I just think he's so great. And I feel like we've talked about Morris Fletcher quite a bit, and we've talked about Dreamland quite a bit, because I feel like Dreamland's on a lot of our episodes or on a lot of our lists.
Great. It's great.
Yeah. And I mean, it's one of my favorites. He's also technically in Jump the Shark, but we don't count that. And it's funny because Jump the Shark is actually like literally one of my very, very least favorite episodes. Like if I like ranked all of the episodes, it's right near the bottom. Even with Michael McKean in it, that's how bad that episode is. Oh, I mean, that's saying something. It really is. I can't even enjoy Morris Fletcher in that, because I know I never watched The Lone Gunman, which is really funny because I feel like he was a character on that show, right?
I don't even know. I think I must have watched The Lone Gunman, but like you with Ally McBeal, I can remember absolutely nothing about that show.
It just left your brain. Yeah. I feel like he might have been a character on The Lone Gunman, like they used him, which makes sense because that's one of my favorite scenes in the episode is when he's, you know, ribbing them for coming up with all the, he came up with all this stuff and they believe it, and he's just tickled by that, and he's making fun.
Funny.
And I love his scenes with Scully where she's just so clueless. Like she knows something is wrong, but she can't bring herself to get there. And it's so frustrating, but he's so funny and he's not even really trying. That's what I love. That's what I love so much about him in this role, is because he's not even trying to be Mulder. Like he's just doing his thing.
Fuck this shit.
He gives zero shits. He's just being himself. He's like, I got this awesome bod. I got this great job and these ladies and I'm just doing me, guys. Like he's not even trying to be like Mulder, which is so funny to me. And it's such it's a cool choice, because it makes it even funnier that it takes Scully so long to be like, what is going on? I mean, I think it's just a testament to her stubbornness. Like she'll always call Mulder on it, but she's just as stubborn. Like she's just as unwilling to see, even when she knows something is wrong, and she knows something is wrong from the very beginning of this episode. And so it's just so funny to watch their dynamic. Those two must have had so much fun together. I bet like working with him would be so much, like he's in all those Christopher Guest movies. He's just hilarious. Yeah. I love him. Yeah. And he's also in Better Call Saul, which is like the spinoff of Breaking Bad. And he has a very big, important part, very different, unique part in that show. Another one, if you're into Breaking Bad, you should definitely check out Better Call Saul, because it's great.
I will.
But he's all, again, and I'm so predictable and I'm so boring, because I don't see it ever changing. I love him. I love that episode. I love everything about it. So that's my number one, Morris Fletcher, Michael McKean.
It's a great choice. I mean, I definitely considered him because he's just, you know, he's obviously great in that role. And he's, you know, one of those standout guest performances for sure. And I was sort of hoping you would have it on your list. So I thought, okay, I think probably Annie's going to have this one. So I won't try to squeeze it into mine. So I'm glad you did.
You've definitely heard me sing his praises before. I know.
I have heard you sing his praises before. I didn't necessarily see it coming into number one, but I totally get it now. I mean, I love Dreamland. That's one of those episodes that I came to like later in my fandom. For some reason, I didn't really get into it when it was on initially, but I love it now. It's an interesting choice in that episode because, you know, the X-Files has done sort of, you know, body swap kind of things before, Small Potatoes being an obvious example just from tonight's discussion. But they didn't choose to have, you know, Mulder as, you know, David Duchovny continuing to play the role of someone who is supposed to be Mulder the way they did in Small Potatoes.
Right.
They actually had Michael McKean playing the role of pretend Mulder. And so it was an interesting choice to go that direction. But like you say, he's not even trying to pretend to be Mulder, which is quite hilarious.
But I mean, in a way, like it's funny because we can watch Mulder attempt to sort of try to
Mulder's
be
trying. He's trying. He's not having much success, but he's trying to be this dad.
He doesn't know this guy, so it's not like he can pretend to be him.
Yeah.
But he knows kind of maybe what he's supposed to behave like. And again, I feel like a lot of my picks in common have like David Duchovny is a great supporting performance to my picks. Yeah. That was not even intentional, by the way, but I'm just noticing it as
he brings out good things in the people around him, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Even though, like, I think in this one particular, I feel like Michael McKean has a lot more scenes with Jillian, and I think they play off each other really well, and it's super funny. Like, her faces, I swear to God, I did a tweet one time, and I love it, and I need to find it, but it was, like, just Jillian's faces every time, like, reacting to him as Mulder, and it was they were classic faces, and you're just like, you want to shake her, you want to be like, hey, something is going on, dude, figure it out, but, like, I don't know.
She's obviously baffled. She obviously knows there's something weird going on, but yet it doesn't occur to her what that is.
It doesn't occur to her, but that is so accurate. Like, she blames it on a head injury. I need to have you drug tested. You've obviously had some sort of mental breakdown. Like, those are the places where she goes, because...
Which is very Scully.
Yes. Where else is she going to go? And and so a lot of people have a hard time believing that it takes her that long, but I don't, I just don't. And also this is a comedy episode. And so I just kind of let it roll off my,
just go
a little
it.
Bit. Yeah. Just go just with go it, with guys. It.
I mean,
funny.
I tend to prefer Dreamland 2, the second part, for that reason.
Yeah.
I do get a little tired of sort of, you know, ignorant Scully in part one. But Michael McKean's still great in part two, even after Scully figures out who he is. I mean, if anything, their dynamic is even more interesting.
It's even more funny. Yeah, because he's completely, he's like, she's the dominant one now. And he's like, oh, okay, okay. And it's just such a funny little reversal. And again, like, when he's in the car and he's honking, he's like, take a picture, it'll last long. I just, everything.
That's awesome, isn't it?
He's so good.
That's one of my favorite scenes. We've discussed how much I love the angst of that scene when Mulder is giving Scully the sunflower seeds, but I gotta say, his honking the horn, take a picture to last longer, is an awesome part of that scene.
He's worse than the bee, right? Like,
he's worse than
if
the
he
bee.
Weren't there, who they might have had a little moment, who
honestly,
knows, right? But he's hurrying them along, and he's beeping the horn, and he's like, come on, we're trying to go. Who cares that you're never gonna see him ever again? I don't care, let's go. I want to go flash my badge and get a great hotel room. Come on. Oh my God.
I love this whole, you know, take a picture to last longer. I sort of imagined if I was like a hardcore no Romo watching The X-Files, that's what I'd be yelling at the screen all the time, because, you know, that happens all the time on The X-Files.
Oh,
Mulder and Scully are just kind of like standing there staring at each other for no particular reason. So if you really weren't into that, that's probably what you'd be yelling at the TV.
It's not, and I have to go watch it now because it's so funny. It's not even just his delivery. He makes a face too. He goes, take a picture to last longer, and he kind of goes,
like what the fuck?
What are you guys doing? Like, he has no clue. It's so great. It's so brilliant.
Why are you guys like this?
Yeah. Why are you like this? Something we constantly ask about those two. It's so
funny.
It's so funny.
It's very apt. It's like, I think he speaks first for parts of the fandom at that point. And it's like, come on, just get on with it one way or the other, you two.
Keep in mind, too, that in the world of Dreamland, he's the only one who is seeing Mulder as Mulder. And so he actually is getting the view of Mulder and Scully. It's not...
Right.
He's seeing what we see as the viewers. Like, he's not seeing Scully standing there with a clone of him. You know, he's seeing these two people with this intense chemistry. And he's, frankly, probably jealous. Hey, she's supposed to be with me. Get over here, Scully.
That's right.
Or Dana.
Yeah, because Scully can't even see it, obviously. You know, I guess if you weren't so ugly kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, you're right. I never thought about it before, that Fletcher's the only one who sees it from the audience's point of view.
Exactly.
So, normally I would hate that kind of an intrusion into a beautiful, angsty scene, but it actually works really well in that one. It makes me love the scene even more. So,
yeah,
that is a really, I can't argue with you at all about that being your number one choice. I think a lot of listeners will heartily agree with you, because that is a very memorable performance.
I just love him. I love that episode, and I love him. He's funny.
He's great. He's a good guy.
Well, this was great, Jen. And, you know, we only had three. I highlit the ones that we shared, which were Peter Boyle, which is what I expected. Bryan Cranston, I also somewhat expected.
Yes.
And Paula Sorge with, I thought was maybe possible, but that was a little bit of a surprise.
For some reason, I didn't see that coming, though I should have in retrospect.
Yeah.
I thought that Karen Carnival would be the other one that we would have in common.
Interesting.
So I'm glad we didn't, because that gives more of wider variety of people to discuss, which we did. That was quite a nice list of people that we came up with between the two of us, I think.
Yeah, I love it. I think it was very, very diverse, and I enjoyed it greatly.
Yeah.
This was fun.
And I mean, like I said, the casting on The X-Files is always great. And of course, these great guest actors wouldn't have brought what they did without the great writing and directing that came with them. And so it's all those things working together.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what? This was a lot of fun, Jen. We got to come up with our next top 10 list. I know we have a few in the pipeline, but if any of you guys have ideas for top 10s you would like to hear us that we haven't already done, or heck, if we haven't done them in 2 years, we could do them again and they'd probably be completely different.
Yeah. I mean, I could do this top 10 list tomorrow that we just discussed tonight and have 10 different ones.
And it would be different. But we also want to hear about your favorite guest stars that we might have missed. So please tweet in at us at XFD Podcast. Let us know what your favorites are. And, you know, maybe we'll read them on the next show. Thanks, you guys, for tuning in and listening. And we will be back with you again in a couple weeks on another episode of The X-Files Diaries.
Bye.
Mm-hmm.